Hello and welcome to Two Old Guys on the Back Porch. I am Steve Scotch, and we have the lovely and talented Kat, that's C-A-T, our hostess with the mostest. Kat, what's happening?
Hey, how y'all doing? We can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, all your favorite podcast platforms. We also can be found on Facebook and Instagram. Give us a follow. If you found either one of us on TikTok, we'll TikTok to you. We're going to shout out two towns here in the United States that are listening to us. The first one is Fallbrook, California. Fallbrook is known as the avocado capital of the world. The area has many different types of avocados. The avocado festival is held there. Also, our local guy, Jason Mraz, musician, also has his avocado farm near there. Our other town is Ottonomowoc, Wisconsin, obviously a Native American name. Ottonomowoc is famous for a resident, Ole Evinrude, Ottonomowoc resident who invented the outboard motor in 1907, is the focus of an exhibit on early boat motors. Anyway, giving y'all a round of applause.
All right, alcohol is chilling here on the back porch. You know, if you ever decide to give up smoking, drinking, or being in love, you don't actually live longer. It just seems longer. Today, I'm back on the 12-year-old Scotch.
Yikes, that's a Christmas present.
In the Waterford crystal glass. My baby gave me. Kat, what you got?
I'm just drinking me a White Claw, being basic bitch today.
Wow. Ooh, sounds sweet like you, babe.
Thanks, doll.
All right, today we're going to go old school and rattle on about something that was big back when our dads were young. And that's the men's service clubs, the Elks, the Lions, the Ruritans. And I say men's clubs because most of these clubs started out as men only. But through the years, some of them have welcomed women. I think the reason you never really heard a big stink about women wanting to join some of these clubs was because the wives of the club members, they were glad the husbands left the house, right? Once a week, once a month.
Yes, Lord.
You know, go to your meeting, beat it, you know, because usually they had food there they have food there.
Right.
You know, and the wife doesn't have to cook that night, right?
Or so, she cooks something different.
Oh, yeah. Have a good time, honey. Now, these clubs, unfortunately, do seem like dinosaurs now. But some are still thriving, and all of them, they do try to make their community a little better. That's the object. The Ruritans founded in 1928. It was like 97 years ago. The Ruritan Club started in Holland, Virginia, which is, it's kind of east of where we're sitting right here in Suffolk, Virginia. My dad was in the Ruritan Club. They have, I don't know, over 23,000 members, and they're a service club that look out for the elderly in their community. They sponsor chapters of the, 4-H Club?
Right.
Boy Scouts, the FFA.
All your local rural organizations. Yeah, my dad was in the Ruritans also.
Okay. The FFA, that's a student organization, right?
Future Farmers of America.
Okay, cool. The Ruritans, just a great club to try to help their communities. The Lions Club, which started in 1917 in Chicago, Illinois. They've got 46,000 local clubs. The Lions, it's an acronym that stands for Liberty, Intelligence, and Our Nation's Safety. Lions Club is international. They operate in more than 200 countries.
Really?
The Lions Club across the globe raises money for hospices, raises money for countries that have been devastated by earthquakes, typhoons. Lions Club are big into helping the blind, raising money for the hearing impaired. Environmental issues are also a topic that the Lions Club dedicates their time to. The Lions' motto is, we serve, and they definitely do. The Rotary Club, formed in 1905, 1.4 million members worldwide for the Rotary Club. It's one of the largest service organizations in the world. Again, most of these clubs are exclusive to men, but the Rotary Club has included women since the 1980s. And they seek younger members, too.
College students. Rotary always seems to be like business guys. It always seems to be, to me, maybe that's where they draw from.
Yeah. They're also have clubs in several countries. They're involved in humanitarian causes. The Rotary Club is big into literacy, education, lots of good work done by the Rotary Club. You know, the other ones you may have heard of, the Freemasons.
Ooh, Freemasons.
The Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks.
Elks.
The Loyal Order of Moose.
The Moose.
The Moose started in 1888. And I know a little bit about the Moose Lodge. Back in the day, my parents were members. And it was a party spot, is what the Moose Lodge was. It still is today.
It still is a party spot. Come on.
Alcohol, music, pool tables, old school party.
Now, see, that didn't really go down with the Ruitans, so.
Yeah. The VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars. VFW helps veterans, their widows and children. And I bring up this topic about these clubs and wonder, you know, will they be a part of our culture down the road? Are they going to survive? You know, here in Virginia, you know, we see the buildings, right? The Rotan building, the Elks. And, you know, you see the parking lot and it's empty. And I know these clubs just meet once a month, once a week. But are the younger generations going to keep these things going?
I don't think they're attracted to it.
I think the answer is no. You know, the Moose and the Rotary Club, maybe. The Moose because it's a family-oriented thing. The Rotary Club, maybe because they have women who are active and doing good deeds. But overall, is this just another part of our culture that's kind of slowly dying away? My dad was in the Rotan Club for like, well, it was a long 35 years ago, probably. And I went with him one night, and there was maybe 20 gentlemen there. And I bet if I went to a meeting today, there's probably like, what, a dozen, maybe?
Maybe.
I kind of think that's where it's going. Today's youth, Kat just said, kind of not interested in gatherings. You can blame it on
antisocial,
the internet.
Internet.
Blame it on the coronavirus, whatever. It's kind of sad, something that our grandfathers and fathers enjoyed. And don't forget, most of these clubs do good to help kids and the elderly in their communities. And, you know, look, if you live in a rural area, really not a lot going on, and your grandfather or uncle or dad asked you to come with them to the Lions Club meeting, give it a go. You know, it might create a spark that gets you to volunteer your time and help people. in your community who need it. All right, let's roll right into One Tough Son of a Bitch. All right, this week, as the slow drum roll comes in, can't pronounce his name. It's Frederick Law Olmsted.
Olmsted.
Born in 1822 from Hartford, Connecticut. Frederick Olmsted is considered the father of American landscape
architecture.
That's what I was going to say. Frederick and his partner, Calvert Fox, designed Central Park in New York City, Prospect Park in Brooklyn, Cadwalader Park in Trenton, New Jersey. Sorry, Trenton. Forest Park in Portland, Oregon. Frederick Olmsted contributed to the Niagara Reservation in Niagara Falls, New York. He worked on the landscape surrounding the United States Capitol building.
Right.
There's too many projects to name that he worked on. Frederick Olmsted's work to this day continues to influence landscape architecture in the United States.
He used a variety of tints and textures of foliage. I mean, he didn't just plant the same tree over and over and over and over again. It was a design. And a lot of, you know, let's see, I've been to Capitol, I've been to Niagara. Central Park, I've been to Niagara. And all of those, they're all beautiful, I would say. I mean, they're
Dude had an eye.
Yeah, had an eye for what he was doing.
What I think is important to remember about Frederick Olmsted is his eye for seeing vast amounts of land in this country that needed to be left alone to its natural beauty.
Right.
Yosemite, Niagara, Prescott Park, all places Frederick Olmsted said should not be marked by the intrusion of artificial objects. He was an early activist in the conservation movement.
And before that, he was a reporter for the New York Times who exposed the injustice of slavery in the South.
And that makes Frederick Olmsted one tough son of a bitch. Did we watch something?
We watched something, and then I really did enjoy this program. Last month, we had the, I believe, the 80th anniversary of the release of Jews out of Auschwitz. And there was a miniseries that Hulu put out called We Were the Lucky Ones. It's a novel about the K-U-R-C Kirk family that all survived World War II. They were a Jewish family. You start with them, I think, 1938. They're all there in a little town called Random, Poland. And they're all there having Passover. The next year, it's about time again to have Passover. But they've all scattered in many directions because the Germans had invaded Poland in 1939. It's an 8-part series, and it's really, really well done. But the only problem is there were 5 kids, and also with wives and stuff and boyfriends going on. And you kind of like, where did everybody go? Because they first start off in Random, and then part of the family is gone over to the other end of Poland where the Soviets were pretty much in charge, and the rest was German. And, you know, and how that they survived, because they were constantly, either they were paying bribes or they were tricking people just to get through World War II and not go to the concentration camps. And, you know, it's just crazy. And like they had one son who was an architect and also a pianist who was in Paris. He ends up in the ship that he thinks is going to take him to Rio, to Brazil. It ends up in Northern Africa.
Was this real?
Yes, this is a true story. near he ends up near Casablanca, and he's just trying to get off of there because guess who's coming from North Africa is the Germans. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, the daughter and one daughter, they were in the part of where the Soviets were controlling, and then they came back to Random. And at one, and they're trying to pass as being not Jewish. And the husband even has a fake foreskin. He'll slap on his penis.
Drop him.
If somebody questions them whether or not that they're Jewish or not. You know, it is just, and one of the daughters had a child. She ends up having to put it into a orphanage. They dye the daughter's hair blonde so that they won't think that, and they change her name to Barbara. It's just crazy, and it's an 8-part series, and you're really into it. And
did you say the 80th anniversary?
Yeah, 80 years ago last month, they released everybody from Auschwitz, and they interviewed a lady who was actually born in Auschwitz right before it was released. I heard that interview, and I was just like, oh my God, that should be the start of your life. Anyway. And it just goes crazy. You never think that this family's ever going to come back together. And they some of them end up in Brazil, and others are going to end up in the United States eventually. But it's crazy. And they all survived. All 5 kids and husbands.
They all reconnected?
Right. They all reconnected in South America. Wow. It's totally, totally crazy. It's a really good, I mean, you want to understand all the dangers that were in World War II and how these people had to survive to try and, number one, keep themselves together and try and keep the family together. And Jolie Lynn King is in it. It's one of my favorite actresses. And it's really well written. It's well acted. The only criticism, some of the scenes are a little dark visually. I mean, I couldn't tell if I need to watch this at night or during the day. I just couldn't see some of it. But other than that, it's a really well done. It's has a 93 on Rotten Tomatoes. It's called We Were the Lucky Ones. It's on Hulu, check it out. It's, if you need an education, you know, some of the World War II movies are a little dark. But this is one that really does give you some hope. Okay?
All right. I need a shot. That was heavy.
That was heavy.
We got to lighten the mood. What do we got?
This is called the leg spreader shot.
Whoa, I'll take one of those.
It is one part Midori, one part coconut rum, and one part pineapple juice.
All right, down the hatch. Ooh. Ow. I don't know if that'll make you spread your legs or not. Coconut, I can taste.
You can taste the coconut.
Because I hate coconut. And so I can really, that's of course what I'm tasting. All right, that's probably like a 80 proof shot there. That's
not bad.
Not bad.
What's the purpose of the shot? To get someone.
Get her done.
Get someone inebriated.
And all right. Well,
some young girl who needs a green shot, this is probably.
It does
do
look
it.
Like some kind of apple. Some kind of apple.
Looks
drink.
Like it belongs in the, that was that movie that just came out, Wicked or something?
Yes,
the
it
green
does.
Part.
All right, thank you, Kat. Give the leg spreader a try, if you know what I mean. All right, this week we were bumpered in with a band called Royal Otis, formed in 2019 from Sydney, Australia. Royal with an E, Otis, or Royal Maddow, and Otis Pavlovic. Hence the name Royal Otis. Very popular on their home turf in Australia. To me, they sound a little like the Rolling Blackouts, Coastal Fever. Easy for me to say, which is another great band getting buzz out of Australia. A lot of good bands coming out of Australia right now. Royal Otis are making waves here in the States. And Capitol Records took notice and signed them to a deal last year.
It says here that their music is inspired by Frank Ocean, James Blake, and King Cruel.
They have signed on to do the Bonnaroo this summer.
Mm-hmm.
Song we were bumpered in with today is called If Our Love Is Dead.
They will be in New York City June 6th at the Parkside Restaurant.
All right. Check out Royal Otis wherever you get your music. I want to thank everyone for listening, for hanging out on the back porch. And we will see y'all down the road.
See ya.